You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden. And today, after a Mayday call from our features executive producers, Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan, we're talking about fear. We didn't want our All the Best producers, friends and family to spend all week thinking about things that terrify them, but sometimes irrational fears are unavoidable.
If something's going to go wrong with the show, it's going to happen in May.
But why? Why May? What happened in past Mays?
So this is something that's happened like in the history of me working with Heidi. So it's really like Heidi and I together plus May equals catastrophe, I think. Our first May is friends. We were on our gap year, so we were like waiting to go to uni, and I was working full time at a Wendy's, like making soft serve and stuff, and weekends at a radio station, and we were both just like destroying ourselves to earn enough money to get youth allowance and leave Port Macquarie. And the budget came out, we found out that they were cutting youth allowance. I also got dumped that May, so like my boyfriend broke up with me at the start of that May. The budget got handed down. It was just a whirlwind of a May.
But do you think that you bring it on yourself? Like May's just another month. Are you
You sound like Heidi. She's like determined to rationalize this very irrational fear of ours. So like I've resigned myself to the fact that it's gonna be bad times in the fifth month. Like it's gonna be not good. But she's determined to think of reasons, like she thinks we might bring it on ourselves with like all these negative attitudes towards the month, or like, oh, just it's getting colder, it's just like us reacting to the winter. It's not winter, it's not university assignments getting handed in because neither of us are at uni anymore. Like it's none of those things that we've tried to blame it on in the past. It's not, it's just the month. It's the month of May.
So I'm picturing you sitting in a room with Heidi and there's a big red button that says May, and when you start freaking out about it, you're going to run up and you're going to hit the big red button. Is it just coincidence that the episode that the big red button was connected to was about fear?
Yeah, no, it's not a coincidence at all. No, it's not even a little bit of a coincidence.
So you just got us all in it with you. We're all in it together.
All in it together. I want to make everyone's maze equally terrible. If my maze is going to be catastrophic, yours is going to be as well. Everyone's going to be thinking about their fears. Some of our producers have actually developed new fears during the making of this episode, as you'll hear later from Leona.
So the biggest cultural reference to May is probably May Day. May Day is actually about radio. It's a radio call.
Well, it is too.
Radio, yeah. It's
a
radio distress call. And that's what this whole episode is. It's a radio distress call from you to all the best producers to say, I'm freaking out. This is May. It's the month of May. I'm hitting the big red button. Let's go out and talk about our fears.
And expose ourselves to them. Because
yeah,
if there's one thing about May, I'm going to have to expose myself to it every 12 months. So thanks, guys, for exposing yourselves to your irrational fears.
This first fear story was produced by Kate Montague as part of the Transom Online Story Workshop. Andrew is a new dad, which has given him a lot to be happy about and a lot to be scared of too.
My name's Andrew and this is Max.
You're going to go up here, don't you? You're going to do peekaboo?
Max is 11 months old and he's going to turn one in December, so very shortly. It's a wonderful thing to have a new little baby, but you end up getting not much sleep and you end up very tired and stressed.
Yes, down a slippery slide.
You're always afraid of them being hurt because you just see how vulnerable they are and how many hazards they create for themselves, let alone the rest of the hazards that are out there in the world. But at the same time, it's unhealthy to worry, so you need to be concerned, I think, and not worried, because you don't want to spend your whole life bound by worry.
Ready?
One, two, three.
That piece was produced by Kate Montague. You can find more stories from the Transom Online Story Workshop on transom.org SoundCloud, including this next piece from Tess Lawley, who interviewed Izzy about her greatest fear.
I'm Izzy, and when I was a little kid, I was afraid that I was an imaginary friend. I was convinced that I was the product of everyone I knew's imagination, that they'd all just kind of like somehow manifested me because they needed someone like me in their lives, and that's how there was an Izzy.
When did you grow out of this? When did you stop feeling that you were an imaginary friend?
I still wonder whether I'm real sometimes, so that's kind of scary. It's always ended up being grounded in some sort of odd interaction between feeling and thinking. I feel like I'm in the world today. I feel the hay fever from that pollen. I am here. That's awesome. So those kind of like physical things are actually a really good way to ground myself and not disappear.
Do you think you'll ever stop feeling like this?
Maybe when I'm dead.
That story was produced by Tess Lawley. You're listening to All The Best. I'm Michael Bryden, and today we're talking about fears. But not your traditional fears, the irrational ones. The ones that you might not realise you have until one day, bam! That's what happened to Emma Kewan when she went to Sovereign Hill and discovered her fear of mannequins.
I'm not sure if it was the first, but I do have one that I pin it on, which is Sovereign Hill, mid-90s. I think I'd gone there with my family for my birthday, and there's like all these weird historical like mining town house dioramas at Sovereign Hill, and one of them is like, I don't know how you describe it, it's like a kitchen, and this like husband mannequin is chasing his mannequin wife in like a loop, but it's not apparent initially. They're like on some kind of pulley, but it's not apparent that they're going to appear. And I remember screaming when I saw this. I would have been like 8 or 9 or something. And my parents were like, "You're the most ridiculous child. This is not a petrifying thing. What is your problem?" And I was like, "I'm sorry, no. This is the scariest thing I have ever seen." I say to people when they say, "Oh, well, it must be very hard for you to go shopping because you're afraid of mannequins." I'm like, "No, no. Shopping mannequins are fine. I've worked in a department store. It's the historically dressed mannequins that are my problem. Anything that's like pretending to be a real person but isn't, I'm not a fan at all." A lot of people are afraid of dolls, and I'm not, but there's just something about mannequins being unexpected, especially in a museum environment, that just petrifies me so much. You never know when they're going to pop up. Like, I travelled with my best friend from like primary school, who's known about this fear forever and thinks I'm ridiculous for it. Every single like museum format that we went into, I was like, "Where are the mannequins? The mannequins are coming. There'll be one around every corner." We went up the Eiffel Tower, and like you go up to the observation deck, and there's like this kind of circular part in the middle that's supposed to be information about Paris. And my friend looked in, and then she kind of jumped back and she went, "Don't look in there. Don't look in there. Do not look through there." And I'd already half looked through there, and there is a mannequin display in the centre of the kind of, it's in a glass case of 1920s Parisian families enjoying the Eiffel Tower. It's so creepy. They're so like not real, and they come out from the darkness. It must be something that was there a long time ago that people could actually see in a sound and light show. I just can't look at them, and I know that it's the most ridiculous thing in the world. You know, I always keep trying to put myself in situations where mannequins are, because I know what a stupid fear it is. Like, I know that nothing is going to go wrong short of like being in Doctor Who and all the mannequins coming to life, but that's a different story. But I just can't stand to look at them, no matter how many times I'm putting kind of like a fear experience with 80 mannequins. Museums, any kind of sound and light show, Ned Kelly's Last Stand. And it's always an educational environment as well, which makes it more awkward, because there are people around you not afraid of mannequins. And they're like, "Oh, very interesting that like in this year this happened." And you're just saying, they're like, "I can't take any of this learning in. Just looking at the scary mannequin face, convincing me that it's going to get me the moment I turn my back. I don't want to think about them anymore."
Emma Kewan told that story to Jess O'Callaghan. Almost every part of your being is telling you to turn and run, but sometimes facing your fears is just what you need. We spoke to Marin over Skype.
I didn't know I had anxiety, but I know I was sad.
She went to a doctor who diagnosed her with social anxiety and suggested she start going to exposure therapy. This is Marin Reed on what it's like to face your fears on a weekly basis.
So then I went to this place called Center for Clinical Interventions, And we did a group therapy thing. Group therapy for 10 people that have social anxiety is really scary, because sort of even one-on-one, I guess, talking about those fears is quite scary. But when you are having to discuss it in front of a group, it was really daunting. But then at the same time, it made me realize that I wasn't the only one that sort of felt like this and had the thoughts of just the intense fear that you are going to say something wrong, or that you're going to embarrass yourself, or that you will fail. So then that was about a 3-month group therapy course, and it was all paid for by the government. And most of it, I would say, was exposure therapy. So we'd have 2 hours every week, and we'd go over sort of what we avoided and why it was bad to keep avoiding those things that scared us. And then during the week, we had to go out and do something that scared us. And then the next week, we'd come back to therapy, group therapy, and discuss how it went and or if we had any problems that stopped us from doing that thing. And for me, it was dating that was really, really scary. And so I went out on dates whenever someone asked me, and I was still petrified. And then you realize that it was fine. I'd be like, yeah, I was really nervous, and my voice was shaking, and my palms were sweaty, but we got along really well, and I don't think they noticed that anything was wrong with me. I guess, yeah, you realize that in your mind you think everyone's going to be able to tell that you're really nervous and anxious, but in reality, most of the time people don't notice. And if they do, no one gives a shit. And there was another thing that really helped, which was one of the sessions that we had, the therapist would, you'd be given a topic to talk about, and they just hand the topic to you, and then you had to give a speech, I think, for about 2 minutes on it. So you weren't prepared, and you had to give it to 10 other people, and then they'd video record it. And you watch it back, and in your mind you're like, oh, I was bumbling and I like didn't know what I was talking about and I was so nervous. But then you watch back the video and realize that the things that you think you do that are very obvious aren't actually obvious. And I guess that's the core of exposure therapy, which is until you do the thing that you're scared of, you don't get to realize and prove to yourself that it's all going to be okay and no one's going to like point and laugh at you. I guess like many young women, I have lots of hang-ups about my body. So I went to a Japanese bathhouse, and you have to get completely nude, and then they have, I guess, a little spa that you can get into and a little shower area next to that where you sit on a stool and you wash yourself. And so it's very calming and meditative. And I was in there and I was by myself, so I was fine. But then this old Italian lady sort of came in. Oh, I think she had problems with the shower tap. So I was sort of bending over, helping her with the shower tap and thinking, oh my God, this is so weird. And there were mirrors everywhere. And I was shaking. I was so, even though it was just one other person, and who cares what she thinks about me? But then I came out of it and I felt really proud that I was able to do that. It started off with dating. And then, well, I guess when I started writing the column, I wanted it to be interesting stuff and stuff that I was interested in, which was going to a fetish night. Like, it petrified me. And it petrified me what people would think of the article once I wrote it. So there was a couple of different anxieties there. And it was really, really fun. I went with a jogging group that met at University of Melbourne and jogged around Princess Park. And it was really hard. And everyone, I was the slowest person by far. And the jogging coach sort of was running next to me and chatting about, oh, so you're from Perth, what's Perth like? And I was like, I cannot breathe, let alone have a chat right now. And I never went back there. Like, I never went back to that jogging thing. It was it was a really awful experience. but more from the actual physical health aspect. I just don't know if jogging classes are for me. If anyone does, I don't know, feel like they have anxiety, just know that there is effective help out there. And I'm still petrified to do things. But But it's so worth it. Like, it's so worth just being, having sweaty palms and feeling like an idiot, but then coming out the other side and realizing that you got through it. And yeah, I still try to do things that are outside of my comfort zone.
That was Merrin Reed talking to All the Best's features executive producer, Jess O'Callaghan. Merrin wrote a column about her experience with exposure therapy. You can find a link at our website, alderbestradio.com. We've spent the past few weeks asking everyone what their irrational fears are, and All the Best producer Leona Hamid has trawled through them, and unfortunately added some more fears of her own to the collection. Hi, Leona.
Hi, Michael.
What were some of the most common irrational fears that you heard of?
Probably the most common thing that kept cropping up with everyone's answers was just like navigating social situations and social cues. We had a lot of answers about public speaking and blind dates and saying goodbye to people and stuff like that. That was definitely a trend.
I think maybe I might mumble my words too much and not really speak clearly.
Speaking in front of large audiences or singing.
Saying goodbye to people in almost any social situation. So it's just with guys, they always want, well, you never know what they want really. Like, it might be a handshake, it might be a hug. And if it's a handshake, sometimes they can get really complicated. And then with girls, it's a hug or a kiss on the cheek. Or I don't know, it just changes every time. And I have no idea how to do it. I leave early, so then I don't have to say goodbye to anyone.
One of my fears, first of all, is sounding weird on radio.
Yeah, that's a big one. I have that one too.
My fear is blind dates. I have a blind date that's happening this Saturday, in fact, which I'm pretty terrified of. I had a blind date once before, about 4 or 5 years ago, and didn't go so well.
Did you find that most of them were perfectly rational, like evolutionary responses to danger and that sort of thing? Like, or were they really irrational fears?
Everyone was at pains to say that this is really irrational, but I have this fear.
My fear, I live in fear of people touching my neck.
I just hate it. I don't know. It gives me the creeps.
I'm afraid of when there's problems on the television. Like whether it's broadcast issues, like in the old days when it was all analog TV, it used to like be awful for me. So if there was like signal issues or there was a problem with the station and they'd have to put a title card up. Since I was a kid, I've been deathly afraid of that for reasons I do not understand. I'm not afraid of snakes, spiders, death, come at me, but TV broadcast issues, I can't handle.
Yeah, the Mad Hatter. Yeah, just had to hide behind Mum.
My fear is to go through a red light during the traffic sequencing and get caught by the camera.
One of the weird ones was we did a lot of Facebook call-outs, and on I think at least most of them, one or two people would be like, I know this sounds really weird, but I have a fear of repeating whole patterns in natural substances. When I read that, I was like, that's outrageous. That can't be a real fear. But it's not a culturally learned fear like other fears. It's a biological revulsion kind of thing. So I pretty much spent the last couple of weeks waving my phone around in people's faces and asking them if they were uncomfortable at this image. And most people really were.
Like holes in things? Something in my head connects to, like, maggots chewing through flesh or something. So if I see termites going through wood or, like, a crumpet, I get, I don't know, really, not really scared, but really disgusted out of nowhere. And it's, or, like, a sponge that's particularly porous. I just sort of nearly throw up. It's not gross things. It's just holes.
All right, well, let's take a step back then. And what were some of the more normal fears, the ones that won't make me dry retch into the microphone?
Well, there were definitely a lot of classic ones like clowns and creepy crawly type stuff, and we got a lot of those answers, which was great in comparison to gross holes in your skin.
There's a couple, but frogs is a massive one, which I can't explain at all.
I am scared of clowns.
So my fear would be being trapped in a room filled with birds, not even filled with birds, just like if a bird walks into the room and just the fear of me scaring the birds was like flapping around the room and me not being able to escape.
So we spoke to Maddie, who's a school teacher in Melbourne, I think. Her fear was really based on an actual experience in her life. She was hit by a car when she was in her teens, and so her fear was of crossing the road.
I was pretty much fine. The car was slowing down, and when I smashed the windscreen with my head, and I just had bruises afterwards, but it's meant that ever since then I'm pretty scared of crossing the road. I always cross at the light unless I'm with someone else, and if I'm with someone else, regardless of how well I know them, I almost always hold their hand or grab their arm, which is awkward if I'm crossing the road with someone I don't know that well and I haven't had time to tell them that this is really scary for me, and then my physical reflex is just to hold on to them, and then I kind of have to wait until we've crossed the road to explain this is why I did that.
So I guess at the end of all this, what I've sort of learned is that fears are these deeply personal things. So what's your fear, Leona?
My fear is early to mid-20th century lunatic asylums. And I know that sounds stupid, but it's kind of like somebody goes into a lunatic asylum and they're not actually crazy, but once they're in a lunatic asylum, the more they try and explain that they're not crazy, the more crazy they seem. That's my worst fear, that one day everyone's going to turn on me and say that you, Leona, you are actually insane, and no one will believe me when I try and tell them that I'm not. And the more I try and convince them, the more crazy I'll seem.
That's crazy. You're crazy. What are you talking about? Eggs are kind of cute, right? Just picture a little one with googly eyes and little feet. Oh, so sweet. You pick him up, but what's this? He's cracked. Out oozes the translucent sticky white, and then the yellow yolk, maybe with a couple of those gross blood spots on it, pops on a sharp bit of shell and dribbles along your finger. This is Alderbest producer Tess Lawley's worst nightmare, and here she is talking to her boyfriend Harry about her irrational fear of eggs.
Well, I think breakfast food is my favorite type of food, and you know, you can't really have a cooked breakfast without eggs.
I severely beg to differ, because I've had many a cooked breakfast in my life and none of them have involved eggs, so...
Yeah, well, technically you can have a cooked breakfast. I'm not doubting that. But to have, like, a delicious cooked breakfast, like eggs... You know, eggs are like that friend that bring all the cool friends together.
I'm pretty sure bacon's that friend.
Nah. Maybe, like, bacon is the Robin to, like, the Batman of, like... Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Eggs are not Batman.
Eggs are totally Batman. Eggs are Batman in the breakfast world.
How do you feel about cooking an egg for me today?
I'm excited. Let's share an egg. How do you, you know, how are you feeling?
I feel physically unwell.
About the egg? Or?
Yeah, just thinking about the egg is making me nauseous. Like, I feel physically...
Have you ever considered that you might just not like eggs? And then that's kind of snowballed into this uncontrollable phobia?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. When I was little, no one in my family ate eggs. I think now my brother and my mum eat eggs, but no one ate eggs, and we all hated eggs, and... And it wasn't until, like, by the time I was about 17, 18, that's when I developed this actual sort of physical, like, visceral reaction to them, like, being around them. Like, I hate just the thought of them, Yeah, it did snowball into a fear. Originally, it was just like, oh, I'm not fond of that.
I feel like if we're going to beat this thing, you got to down the whole egg.
I don't want to down the whole egg. Concerned.
It was a joke. No, of course. I will happily eat the egg.
Thank you. Okay. Let's cook an egg. Oh, God.
like a really gross pancake. Oh, it's so eggy. It's probably because it's just an egg.
You're shaking.
Yeah, I'm actually, like, I'm not hamming that up. I just feel really, like, oh, it's like yellow on the in the bit.
I thought it was looking good for like a split second, but then you kind of sat back and put your hands on your face.
I was kind of hoping that like I'd eat the egg and I'd be like, oh my god, this is delicious, I'm gonna eat eggs forever, but no, quite the opposite. I'm sorry, I've not come to terms with my fear of eggs in any way, shape or form.
Thanks to Tess Lawley for eating an egg to make an excellent story for the radio. We'll never make you do it again. And thanks to her boyfriend Harry for enduring the Tess eating eggs experience. You know, in the lead up to this episode, I've been thinking a lot about fear and what scares me. And I think that, as a radio producer, by far the scariest thing I can think of is... This episode of All the Best was produced at Sin Radio in Melbourne in association with FBI Radio in Sydney and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Thanks to all the producers who contributed to this episode, Tess Lawley, Kate Montague, Leona Hamid and Emma Kewen. And thanks to everyone who responded to our call out for fears. Our features executive producers are Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan, our community coordinator is Pip Rasmussen, and our executive producer is Jordana Caputo. I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.